In the moments after two bombs exploded near the finish line of the Boston Marathon last month, detectives around the country had already begun their investigation into the attack.
From examination of the explosions themselves to gathering surveillance footage and pictures from the scene, all this information led to the identification and capture of the bombing suspects within just 5 days of the attack.
The investigative techniques and the technological advancements that have made them possible are explored in a new Nova documentary titled Manhunt, Boston Bombers. The documentary premieres tonight on PBS at 9 p.m. And we're joined now by its producer, Miles O'Brien. Miles, welcome to Radio Boston.
Sharon, great to be here.
So, Miles, your documentary gives us a play-by-play of the investigation, and we learn in the film that that investigation began just minutes after the explosions. What kind of information were the investigators gathering in those moments immediately after?
Well, one of the first things that was on their mind, and we talked about it, of course, all throughout that week, was the video. Within 10 minutes, detectives from Boston Police were up and down Boylston Street knocking on doors at the various businesses to get video from the various surveillance cameras that were out there. This, of course, was followed by an appeal to the public. Mm-hmm. Of course, everybody has a camera these days, especially at the finish line for the marathon, to have them contribute to the video and photo acquisition. They were very quickly awash in a sea of video, and it was an important part of the case, but the question is, where do you go from there?
Well, one place where you went in the documentary was determining the nature of the bombs themselves. Your crew traveled to New Mexico Tech University, which is the most active explosives testing facility in the U.S., and you spoke to Van Romero, one of the world's leading experts on explosives. So talk to us about that as he explains in the film that he knew a good amount of information about the bombs just from the smoke.
Yeah, Van Romero, interesting guy. He trained about 1,500 of the first responders here in Boston. That's the kind of support he gives to the people who know about this kind of work. He was watching the footage, and he saw the white smoke. And if you're an expert, you know pretty quickly that's black powder or gunpowder. Mm-hmm. And that leads you down the road to an IED or some sort of improvised or homemade device. His initial thought was a pipe bomb, which are made of black powder. But he looked pretty quickly and saw the extent of the damage and said he thought almost immediately that the pressure cooker device might be the case. Now, the pressure cooker bomb had not arrived on U.S. shores until April 15th, really. Mm-hmm. It's a widely used instrument of terror elsewhere, and this as a device here had not reared its ugly head.
So then you filmed Van and his team constructing and detonating a pressure cooker bomb similar to the one used here at the marathon. Tell us about how that went.
Well, first thing, it was distressingly simple to build. Hmm. And we should just tell everybody, we don't offer a how-to very deliberately, but it's not easy or not difficult, I should say, to find out this information if you're so inclined. That's the first scary thing. You have to wonder why we haven't had more of these, frankly. What they do at New Mexico Tech is they help in after-action cases. They help build a case against a terrorist. If you're trying to determine what sort of bomb exploded, the first thing they do is they test a theory by building a bomb as they suspect it was built there. They explode it. They record it with very high-resolution, super slow-motion cameras. And they go through and check the debris pattern and see how that matches up to what happened at the crime scene. And that was part of what we were privy to when we were there.
Right. And then your team also went to New York City to see what their police department calls the Domain Awareness System, which is a unique enterprise, right?
Unique, cool, and actually kind of scary. And it can put chills up and down my spine. I mean, you talk about the potential for Big Brother. It's right there. As I was telling you at the beginning, detectives physically had to go up and get those mm-hmm. videos.
In Boston.
Now, in New York, what they've done is they've stitched together 4,000 privately owned cameras into one room. And it's watched in real time. You can imagine that's like drinking from a fire hose. What good would 4,000 cameras do for you? So they have some software they developed with Microsoft to spot the suspicious activity. So if I put a bag down on a corner for a certain increment of time, the camera that is registering that eventually will flag inside the center and direct attention to people there, and they'll start looking into seeing what's going on. If there's a report of some suspicious character with a red shirt near the New York Stock Exchange, within 2 seconds, they have cameras, every camera in that area, up on a screen and identifying. So imagine if they had the white cap, right?
Sure.
How that could have played out. It might have led them to the suspect sooner.
Well, interestingly, we have a clip here from your film of someone at the command center as they're explaining the advantage of what they say the advantages of having all the cameras connected to one system.
If these cameras weren't all on one system, what you'd have to do is you'd have to go to a pole, retrieve the video data, and then each camera would have to be looked at individually by a person to pull out the red shirt.
So we see in your film how they decide to look for the red-shirted person, and boom, there it is. And as you say, there is a certain element of creepiness to this.
Yeah, it made me think an awful lot about the security apparatus which we have created post 9/11. It's obvious we need to come up with ways to make ourselves safe. At the end of the day, if we have a safe world in which we don't want to live, we have not succeeded very well. We have to be careful about all of this and make sure that we're not stepping over boundaries. And the problem is when you build an infrastructure like this and a bureaucracy to run it, it tends to grab more and more turf, and we have to be watching it.
On the other hand, was there anyone you spoke with, any of the investigators in New York, with this system that they have, that thought that the Marathon bombings could have been prevented if we had a surveillance system like that here?
Well, no one in New York was going to say that, of course, directly. But put it this way, if you have a fully networked surveillance system, as they do in New York, and it's trained on an event like the Boston Marathon, it is possible you could detect suspicious behavior in real time. We can't say that. That would have prevented things. But the fact is, if you have eyes on a problem or a potential problem, you got a better shot at it, and they didn't.
Right. Now, the documentary also offers a pretty fascinating window into the facial recognition world. And to see more about this technology, you went to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and spoke with the scientist Mario Savitas. And he talks about the roles that computers can play when all you're starting with is just this blurry, pixelated photo. Let's listen to a moment of that.
It can do things that our human brain cannot do, because it can learn the relationship of what a low-resolution degraded face image is and what the high res. And when you give it enough data to learn that relationship, then you can actually build an algorithm to extract a high res face that you can feed into such systems to try to give you a match.
So how does this work? How does the computer learn the relationship between a fuzzy photo of a person and a clear photo of them?
This thing is truly extraordinary. I mean, he took an image, those initial images that the FBI released on that Thursday night. He took one of them that was sort of somewhat frontal image of Zhohar Tsarnaev, and he put it through his algorithm, which took essentially 12 pixels from eyeball to eyeball and came up with a face that was actually pretty accurate as far as a computer was concerned for a potential match against a database of driver's licenses or passport photos and the like. Essentially, what he does is he feeds the computer thousands to millions of pairs, low resolution and high resolution, and the computer learns. The computer picks up patterns and makes connections, pattern recognition that our human eyes and brain cannot make. So they really are smarter than we are.
But this is sort of new and experimental work. This was not used in the Boston
Marathon.
Well,
it almost did get used. What happened was Marios and his team, when they saw the picture, they said, you know what, let's just try this, see what happens. Mm-hmm. This is our new algorithm. What can we do? So they actually, they burned the midnight oil that same night that the shootout was going on in Watertown and created this image. They were about to send it off to the FBI, and all of a sudden the IDs became evident. And so it became more of an academic exercise for them. They stuck a high-resolution image of Zhohar in there just to see how their model would do. And out of a million mugshots in a database, it ranked number 20. So, it's not like a fingerprint where you're going to get ironclad evidence, but that means that they have 20 people to talk to in that order, and that person might rise to a level where it's manageable.
Even that is a little different from the Hollywood depiction of facial
recognition. It's not CSI, not quite, but it's on its way. It really is.
At the end of the film, Boston Police Superintendent Bill Evans offers the perspective that, all these technological advances and investigative work, great, but it's human beings who solve crimes, not machines. And I'm wondering what you make of that viewpoint.
Well, he's got a really good point. You know, as he says, I'm not much of a CSI guy. You know, he's of the vintage, a cop from Boston, from Southie, who, boots on the ground are what count. And in the end, if you think about it, whether it was shoe leather on the street to go pick up those videos or pick up every last piece of that pressure cooker bomb, the fragments of it, those are the keys that made this all happen. So, you know, I'm a science and technology correspondent. I like to look for gee whiz things that are going to change the world. The fact is, it doesn't operate in a vacuum. These are tools. They have to be used wisely. And that's what the police are using them well. We want to make sure they don't use them in such a way that we're living in a police state.
Right. Well, this is an intriguing look into the investigation. Thanks, Miles, for sharing with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Miles O'Brien, producer of the new Nova documentary Manhunt: Boston Bombers. It premieres tonight on PBS at 9 p.m. You'll find more information on our website, radioboston.org.
And stay with us. Up next, Happy Money: the link between happiness and money and the science of smarter spending. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sharon Brody. This is Radio Boston.